Hello and welcome to Press TV's News Analysis. Coming to you from Tehran, I'm Marzieh Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, as the country is trying to grip onto stability after a devastating war and occupation, Iraq now is facing more obstacles. How certain regional countries who are playing an active role in trying to overthrow the Syrian government now seems to be targeting Iraq. Turkish Prime Minister is claiming that Iraqi government of sectarianism, and at the same time demonstrations have sprung up in Anbar province. Is this related? We'll be taking a look at this and this news analysis. Stay tuned, please.
Sporadic anti-government protests continue in the western Iraqi province of Al-Anbar. The demonstrators have blocked a key highway connecting Iraq to Syria and Jordan for the past week. The protesters, all Sunni Arabs, claim they've been marginalized by the Iraqi government. On Sunday, the Iraqi Deputy Prime Minister, also a Sunni, went to the site of the anti-government rallies in Ramadi to appease the demonstrators. Protesters attacked Saleh al-Mutlaq and forced him to flee. They called him a traitor. Protests broke out after security forces arrested the bodyguards of Iraqi Finance Minister Rafe Isawi on terror charges. They're not the first people to have been detained of alleged involvement in acts of terror, though. One high-profile figure on Iraq's wanted list is the fugitive vice president, Tariq al-Hashimi. Hashimi's been sentenced by an Iraqi court to death for orchestrating a series of terrorist attacks against Iraqi citizens and officials. Hashimi is now in Turkey, which is being accused of trying to undermine the government of Nouri al-Maliki in favor of Ankara's regional allies such as Saudi Arabia and Qatar. Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan has openly attacked Maliki and accused him of trying to cause ethno-sectarian strife in Iraq. Erdogan claimed the Maliki government represents a minority. He also promised to go to the U.S. and discuss the issue with the White House. The Turkish government has also sided with Iraq's autonomous region of Kurdistan in its recent confrontations with the federal government. On Saturday, the fugitive Iraqi vice president urged Persian Gulf Arab states to support what he called the uprising in Anbar province at a meeting in Qatar. The Qatari emir, for his part, hailed Hashimi as a great Iraqi figure. Many now fear Turkey and its regional Arab allies are concocting a Syria-style scenario for Iraq, which is on track towards stability after the withdrawal of U.S. forces last year.
Well, let me welcome my guest to the program from London, Middle East expert, Mr. Zayd al-Issa. And from Beirut, political analyst, Mr. Intifad Qanbar. And from Baghdad, by phone, political analyst, Mr. Saad al-Mutalabi. Welcome all of you to the program. Well, let me start this off in Baghdad itself with Mr. al-Mutalabi. Now, the Turkish Prime Minister, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, is claiming that the Iraqi Prime Minister, Nouri al-Maliki, is sectarian and is discriminated against Sunni Muslims in the country. Being an Iraqi, I would like your take on this accusation. Do you agree or disagree, first of all?
Thank you very much. I mean, it's rather funny, or maybe he was joking, this Turkish Prime Minister, because first of all, he didn't know who's minority and who's majority in Iraq. He accused Prime Minister of being from a minority where Shiites in Iraq constitute 70% of the population. And Mr. Maliki was elected, as with the other members of Iraqi parliament, and then selected from the parliament to be the prime minister in a fair and open, transparent election. Participated more than 56% of the population went to the vote. And all these information seems that have escaped Mr. Erdogan. So it's rather strange, very unusual statement we heard from Erdogan, but then we know it has been a while where Mr. Erdogan has been moving into an expansionist policy into the Middle East, partly trying to interfere in the events of Iraq, having a special deals and agreements with Masoud Barzani in Kurdistan, and also meddling in the affairs of Syria and sending and changing or making Turkey a stop or a transition point for Al-Qaeda fighters to be collected from all over the world and sent into Syria to commit atrocities against the Syrian people. So there is a policy within Turkey to expand within the this region to interfere.
All right, well, let me turn to London, get Mr. Zeyd Al-Issa in on this. Do you think this is all about expansionism, or why do you think that Turkey is making those claims, and why now, in your perspective?
I think what Turkey is doing is trying basically to take over the role that was Egypt's role in the Middle East, which was Hosni Mubarak was acting as the henchman of Saudi Arabia and Qatar. Now the Turkish Prime Minister is basically and clearly singing from the hymn sheet of Saudi Arabia and Qatar, who have been emphatically against the democratic change and the political process in Iraq since day one. And they haven't basically relented in their relentless and implacable efforts to dismantle this political process. Now, the accusation of the Iraqi government of being a sectarian government flies in the face of realities and evidence on the ground. The Sunnis have been given prominent positions within the Iraqi government, like the deputy, the vice president, the deputy prime minister, the finance minister, and countless other positions. And this basically is in stark contrast to those countries which accuse Iraq of being deliberately sectarian, like Saudi Arabia, where there are absolutely no rights to minorities and to Shias who are being treated there and who are being subjected to a brutal, ruthless crackdown by the invading powers, also by the invading forces of Saudi Arabia. What Turkey is trying to do is actually get the full backing and the full support of Saudi Arabia and Qatar and convince them that he is now the right-hand man and he is capable of achieving what they failed to do in instigating and actually stirring up the sectarian violence which happened in 2006
and 2007. Let me get to Mr. Ghanbar in on this discussion. Mr. Ghanbar, excuse me, what would be the overall goal, as Mr. Al-Issa has just said, basically wanting to stir up sectarianism? My question, though, for someone or some entity that is a part of the region, could something like that not backfire on themselves? Why would a leader of a country in the same region want to stir up sectarianism?
Well, I tell you, it's very clear that Turkey is probably claiming itself as a protector of the Sunnis in the region, in coordination and harmony with the Islamic Brotherhood, which has taken over Egypt and Tunisia after the Arab Spring, and also in coordination and harmony with the Western countries. There's very clear a deal. I don't think this sectarianism or the neo-sectarianism that is raging very recently in the region, and we can see the ugly face of it. We've seen the ugly face of it in Iraq, as my two friends know, Isa and Muttalib. In Iraq, we saw the ugly face of it. Why are we seeing the ugly face of it now in Iran? In Syria, a raging war of sectarianism that has nothing to do with establishing democracy. It is very clear, and we all agree, and every Iraqi agrees, and every person with some sort of wisdom could agree that sectarianism and fragmentation of Iraq in light of the terrible civil war in Syria, the fragmentation of Iraq will have very bad consequences on the region and on the Iraqi people as well as first victims. And we, as I said, we saw this terrible sectarianism, what
has
done.
Let me just jump in here, Mr. Khan, but when you talk about fragmentation, are you talking about it in a literal sense? Do you think that the goal is actually to break up Iraq in various regions, for example, with a Kurdistan split? Or exactly what are you talking about when you talk about fragmentation there?
Well, I tell you one thing. There is no chance for Iraq to be fragmented. The Iraqi constitution solved this problem by putting Iraq as a federal system. In spite of the problems between the government in Baghdad and the government in Kurdistan, I think these are temporary problems will lead to be solved eventually. Prime Minister of Iraq today made some comments that any sense of talk of war with Kurdistan is far away from happening. Differences happen in democratic systems. That's no problem. But I think the enemies of Iraq, the enemies of Syria, the enemies of the region, including many Gulfies, are using this sectarianism and these sectarianism playing into their hands. Therefore, I think we should take a deep breath and make sure that we don't get used, we don't let ourselves get used by those countries, and we should not let Iraq be the weakest link in this chain under such a terrible pressure that I hope will pass away very soon, safely.
All right, well, let me turn back to Baghdad itself, Mr. Al-Matalibi. When the Turkish government, or Mr. Erdogan, makes certain accusations, first of all, about Prime Minister Nuri al-Maliki, as I said in the beginning, and also the Turkish government is actually playing host to an accused terrorist, former Vice President Tarık al-Hashimi. First of all, I want to know, how are they allowed to get away with that from the international standards? Isn't this aiding and abetting? Because this should be, I would think, a domestic issue, and no other sovereign country should be involved in what simply it seems to be an Iraqi problem.
Worse than that, Mr. al-Hashimi, actually the criminal, Mr. Hashimi, he's not only a criminal on crimes, normal crimes, but he's sentenced for crimes against humanity and terrorism charges, which put him in a special category and put Turkey in aiding a terrorist group into a special or a unique position within the Western world of a country that is moving towards democracy, part of NATO, and trying to be part of the European Union, and aiding a terrorist group. So that is quite a very serious charge. Unfortunately, Interpol has no authority to arrest people within countries outside their jurisdiction. But they can ask the host country to arrest those any wanted person and deliver that person to the asking country. And in this case, actually, Interpol issued the red card and asked the Turkish government to arrest Mr. Hashimi and hand him over to Interpol to be able to transfer him back to Iraq. But Turkey, in retaliation to that, or in reply to that, issued Tarık al-Hashimi with a Turkish citizenship, which means that they cannot deliver him to Interpol, being a citizen of Turkey. So that moving on this path of aiding a terrorist, a known and now a convicted terrorist, put Turkey in a peculiar, a peculiar position in front of other NATO members and in front of the international world that is fighting terrorism and trying to get rid of Al-Qaeda and related groups to Al-Qaeda.
Well, Mr. Zayed Alisa, looking at that same, we've been talking about now Tariq al-Hashimi, but let's look at what has happened now with Qatar. And basically, when they have talked about Tariq al-Hashimi, the Emir of Qatar, he's basically praised him as a very important Iraqi. What exactly does that mean? Why is Qatar, why do you think that Qatar is even making that type of statement, and why now?
Well, it's not the first time that he was hailed and received formally as a hero with a red carpet reception by not only Qatar, but by also the foreign minister of Saudi Arabia and also Turkey. They're using him as a symbol, and they're trying to highlight or underline to prove their case that there is marginalization and there is systematic sidelining of the Sunnis by telling the Sunni people in Iraq, look, there is your hero, there is your symbol. He's being humiliated by the Shia dominant government. And this shows emphatically that there is sectarian policies pursued by the Iraqi government. Now, let's not forget that when we look at the whole situation, that unlike 2006, now the Saudis and the Qataris are relying on the Turkish backing in actually stirring up and igniting an ethnic tension in Northern Iraq by the emphatic backing of Turkey to Masoud Barzani to actually start an ethnic confrontation with the central government. And we mustn't forget that the same role is being played by Saudi Arabia and Qatar by actually funding and arming and paying even salaries in an unprecedented move to Wahhabi Salafi fighters gathering in Turkey and actually starting terrorist attacks within Syria in the hope of creating a safe haven and sanctuary to move into Iraq. This is all part of the new strategy adopted by Saudi Arabia and Qatar, with Turkey simply executing their plans and throwing its support behind it to win over the Qatari and Saudi endorsement
to actually destabilize and dismantle Iraq. That I had asked earlier, how likely is this to backfire? For example, in Turkey, you're talking about training these Salafist fighters, but how likely is it that these same individuals that they may be supporting now, that they can actually fight against the Turkish government itself?
Well, the Turkish government is simply absolutely desperate to replace the role taken by Egypt previously and to prove to the Saudis that they are absolutely indispensable and they have to rely on them. And they are the main reason for this, let me emphasize this point, is that the Iraqi government, the central government, did not react to the Saudi Arabian and Qatari instigation and openly inciting sectarianism in Iraq by actually using the simple political tools, that is simply withdrawing and cutting relations, or simply withdrawing the Saudi ambassador, which is to add insult to injury that Saudi Arabia never recognized Iraq. It's only after, only before the Arab summit that they actually positioned their ambassador in Jordan. Now, the Iraqi government have absolutely refused to actually do the right thing, well, even though they are fully aware that the money and the funding which used to go to Al-Qaeda secretly in Iraq is now going directly and openly and publicly to Al-Qaeda.
What Mr. Al-Isa is saying, do you think that the Iraqi government perhaps could have been more aggressive in dealing with the Saudis in this situation? How do you see it?
Is that a question to me?
I was referring to some of the comments that Mr. Zayed Al-Isa has made, and he basically said that a lot of the blame actually may go back to the Iraqi government itself for not being more aggressive with these entities as they have tried to interfere along the way in Iraqi affairs.
Well, I think, I don't know how to, can we be more aggressive, but I think the best way to deal with this problem is to unite ourselves and to put away our differences. As I said, we have now a formation of former Ba'ath Party cells into what is called the Free Iraqi Army, in line with the so-called Free Syrian Army. So the situation is getting very dangerous. I think we are surrounded now by danger from spreading the violence from Syria to Iraq, God forbidden, and we don't have very nice neighbors on the Saudi borders. And I think it's extremely important that we gather ourselves together now and not let Qatar and Saudi Arabia, as Mr. Issa said, play their hands inside Iraq and play the sectarian card. These things may be difficult sometimes for the Iraqi government to do, but unfortunately it is our responsibility first to save ourselves and help ourselves before we expect anybody else to help us.
All right, well, Mr. Al-Matalibi, your perspective, do you think, as Mr. Ghanbar has just said, that perhaps there's a scenario that is on the way, sort of like, as he said, the Free Syrian Army, now a Free Iraqi Army. Do you think that the plan is actually to cause division and chaos in Iraq as they have caused in Syria and try to change the government in that way?
Well, the danger is there. There are supporters, there are extremists in Iraq. They do intend to harm the relationship between the different factions of the Iraqi people. They do have certain thoughts or positions against the Iraqi government. So the danger is there. But how active they will be, will the government be able to stand against them? I think what is happening in Syria and what's happening in Iraq is very different. Those who think they can apply the same formula that worked in Syria and they think that will work in Iraq have done all their calculations wrong. Iraq socially is different. Politically, it's different. Iraq is a democratic country. The army of Iraq move according to the will of the Iraqi people. So if there is any thought that forming such a group or such a terrorist group that will openly resist or openly challenge the state of Iraq, they will not only be crushed, but they will have dire consequences on them, and they will see the actual anger of the Iraqi people. So I think whoever thought of this plan, as I said, have miscalculated everything, and there's no way that such a force could exist in Iraq or could have any effect on the government. But that doesn't mean that there are people or the people don't think of that. Okay. Naturally, there are enough crazy people to think like that.
Well, Mr. Zayd Al-Issa, 30 seconds. What do you think the Iraqi people have to do now in order to prevent, as we said, a similar scenario that is taking place in Syria to take place in Iraq?
Well, most importantly is we need a genuine and sincere dialogue, but it has to be a dialogue between people who are willing to sit and listen. But let me just answer part of the question that you mentioned earlier. One of the simplest and softest tool within the hands of any government is actually to summon the ambassador, sever relations, or withdraw its ambassador, or cut its relations. These are all tools that the Iraqi government never dared or never even thought of actually utilizing or using against the Saudi government, which could have been created a precedent or an example
well,
for the
so
Turkish
sorry,
government.
Not to we are out of time, but I appreciate you being on the program. I'd like to thank you from London, Mr. Zayd Al-Issa, from Middle East expert, and from Beirut, political analyst, Mr. Intifada Ghanbar, and from Baghdad, political analyst, Mr. Saad Al-Matalibi. Thank you all for being with us. Thank you, viewers, for being with us. Make sure you join us right here, same time, place tomorrow. I'm Marzieh Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Thank you so much, and goodbye.